Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a frigid episode 143 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming to you live from the cave here in Austin, Texas. With me, as always, is the stalwart Stephen Bishop.
What's up, people?
It is chilly night.
Well, we were originally supposed to have the band Hidden Empires on tonight. They confirmed this afternoon, and then once the freeze warning hit, they decided to postpone the episode. But congrats on the completion of the new EP, Hidden Empires, guys.
We intend to
have y'all on to discuss it, talk about the creation of it, talk about the music inside of it, things like that. Perfectly understandable that you don't want to get out when there is a freeze warning in Austin.
Right. Me used to that.
Just for y'all out there who are preparing to drive, things like that, remember the roads will get icy. They aren't icy yet. We haven't been below freezing temperatures for more than 8 hours. So,
yeah. You're good
like
right
things
now.
Things are okay. They'll probably get dangerous after
just
midnight,
freeze
something
your
like
balls
that.
Off right now.
So, well, it's chilly for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely brisk outside. I don't know, having spent like almost the last 2 weeks in Massachusetts. When we left, it was like 6.5, 7 degrees when we left Massachusetts last week.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, this to me is like, I get to break out my actual like winter gear, you know, not like my hardcore main winter gear where it's like fur lined and stuff. But hey,
at least
I get to pull out like my zip up and my, you know,
peacoat. I had to dig out like these boxes, you know, like because, you know, we don't use this shit that often. So, you know,
my
winter stuff is like in boxes.
Well, and just a few tips for those of you out there. Like you said, we don't really deal with this stuff here. So,
yeah.
Austin is woefully unprepared for freezing, as is Houston. Dallas is a little bit better prepared
for it. I bet they've already canceled school for tomorrow, huh?
I bet that, most of them have not necessarily canceled, but at least given a late start for the day. I guarantee you if there is frost on the ground in the morning, like, there will be no school.
Right, right.
That's just how it's going to work. But
they don't do that up north. This ain't nothing.
Oh, God, no, man. Like, I remember one of the last jobs I had in Maine was a part-time job for the school district right down at the end of my road
The
elementary school.
Huh.
And I was actually a crossing guard for the school.
What?
In the morning and the afternoons, I was a crossing guard.
Huh.
Got paid like $10 an hour.
You're the mama guard.
Yeah, man. I made like $30 a day being a crossing guard. It was like $600 a month just to stand at the end of my road for a couple hours a day. I was self-employed. What else was I doing in the middle of the afternoon and early in the morning?
You hustling.
Nothing. I didn't have gigs. My gigs were like at night. You know, even when I worked at the broadcast station, I didn't have to be there till 7 p.m. because meetings didn't start till late. So, you know, it was like, why not? It's a great extra income.
Yeah.
Super cool. Great experience. I always loved working with kids. So it was nice to keep them safe on their route to school. But the month before I left, I was home for Cinco de Mayo. And in April, we had a final big snowstorm, as we typically do in Maine. And there was about a foot of snow on the ground.
Dang.
Kids are still walking to school.
Are we talking negative temperatures?
With the wind chill going on, it was like -5. You know, it was probably, I mean, you have to remember for every degree of, or for every mile per hour of wind, you drop a degree in wind chill for the feels like temperature. So even though it was probably about 15 outside, it was probably about -5 with a 15 or 20 mile per hour wind.
Woo!
So, considerably chillier than it is here, but doesn't even register as a snow day for them. Like, kids are trudging through the snow to school. Like, no, your boss is like, why are you late?
Yeah,
there was only a foot of snow on the ground. What, you didn't wake up early enough to dig your car out? You know, Like, yeah, that's it's kind of like whenever we have like a hurricane here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, where are you at? Oh, you're flooded in. Okay. You know, but, you know. Yeah, it just it doesn't register up there. And for those of you that are driving in this stuff, just a few tips, a few pro tips. If you aren't used to dealing with real winter temperatures in your vehicle, number one, remember, warm your car up.
Yeah.
Don't just go out and if you go out in the morning and there's ice on your windshield, don't just try to start the windshield wipers.
Ugh.
Bad move. I would highly recommend if it's drizzling in your area right now. Take the time to go out and just pop your windshield wipers up. Literally, like, prop them up. There's a little spring mechanism that'll hold them up that actually keeps the small slice of rubber from freezing to the windshield, which is a common issue in this temperature.
So you're saying, like, the night before kind of do that?
Yeah, like, right now, same as, like, starting a drip of water in your pipes to keep them from freezing.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because if you go to start it, what's going to happen is if that rubber is frozen to the windshield, it's literally going to rip right off off the windshield wiper if it doesn't actually just pop the motor on your windshield wiper. There's actually a little safety release in there that keeps it from over torquing, and it'll come off and your windshield wiper will keep going, but the wiper won't move at all. So common issue. You have it a lot more with heavy snow, heavy freezing, but you know, it can be an issue in this temperature, with water falling, all that kind of stuff, rain, drizzle, for your windshield wipers to freeze to your windshield. Also remember, warm water on a cold windshield, not a good idea to defrost your windshield.
Won't that break your windshield?
Yeah. I remember a girl in high school did that. And it's like, no.
Jesus.
You know, that was like, oh, man, why you got to break your windshield in the parking lot just trying to, you know, go out, start your car, let it warm up, turn the defrost on all the way and crank the heat and let it go for about 5 or 10 minutes.
Like, I knew that early in life. And don't throw hot water on
it. You know, I mean, think about what happens whenever you throw an ice cube in a glass of hot water. Yeah. You know, you're going to hear a lot of cracking.
I was going to say, you hear that popping and cracking.
Yeah. So just a few pro tips for those out there braving the winter temperatures to go to work, things like that. Not only that, but if you are driving on ice, remember the race car rules. There are only three things that your vehicle does. It goes, it stops, and it turns. And it does not like doing all those things at the same time.
Ew.
All right? So if you're going downhill, don't brake and turn.
Oh, fuck no.
that's how you skid. So you want to decelerate first and then apply your brakes. Like, one thing at a time. Yeah. Remember, you're going forward with momentum, so you want to stop that momentum by letting off the gas.
Yeah.
Like, preemptively letting off the gas, seeing things, being aware well ahead of time.
Exactly.
Pumping your brakes, being slow about it. And if you do go to skid, remember, steer toward the curb.
And don't hit the brake.
That's what the curb's for. Yeah, don't stab on your brakes, things like that.
Yeah.
Be just gentle on them, be easy. Don't try to turn while you're while you're accelerating like you normally would, things like that.
You should take your foot off and countersteer.
Exactly, you know. So there, you know, stuff like that. It's a little bit different when you're driving on icy roads. And speaking of icy conditions, stuff like that, one of the things that is heavily, heavily taxed, we were talking about this earlier. We were like, I wonder how many breakers are going to pop.
Right.
You know, because, yeah, things get a little bit more overloaded.
Yeah.
Circuit-wise, people want to put heaters in their rooms and stuff like that. In our rehearsal spaces, and you know, it can overload stuff. It can overload things on your home power system as well. So you have to think safety wise.
Even a little heater pulls a lot of.
It pulls a lot of amperage. Most of the small heaters that you get pull at least 10 to 15 amps. So that is half of your circuit to begin with.
Damn.
Much less if you have it on other stuff. So it can be very dangerous. It can be odd. Don't be having any exposed heaters, things like that, in your house, in your bedroom. Keep them away from your kids, that kind of stuff. They tend to let off carbon monoxide, that kind of thing, especially open coil heaters. But one of the things that we talked about recently was power. Power consumption. We recently had the head of Austin's sustainability project on, the Office of Sustainability. We had Zach on talking about electricity, things like that. And it was like, you know, what are we going to replace this evening with is what came up tonight with me and Steve-O. And it's like, you know, we haven't done a knowledge. We haven't done a Knowledge Vault episode in a while.
Yeah.
And with some of the articles that I've posted recently on Dudes and Beer Facebook group, it was one of those like, let's talk about Tesla technology. We had done a, pre-record and it kind of got messed up, but I'm kind of glad that we waited at the same time because there's been some interesting developments here as of late. And one of them that I was talking about with Zach was actually the power coefficients of LED to incandescent lights.
Right.
And, you know, there was a huge study that just came out from IHS, some people that I work with and do shows with every year, did a big study on the efficacy of LED and the fact that per lumen, sure, in the long run, it seems like they're saving power because they consume less. But per lumen, which is, you know, the rank of brightness of a light is in lumens. So, you know, if you're talking about like 600 ANSI lumens and you're talking about like it's the equivalent of like, you know, 300 suns, something like that. And in brightness. So it's
interesting.
No, that's a candle in darkness, actually. Because, yeah, that's what lumens is. It's a measure of candle watt power. So it would be the equivalent of 600 candles in a room would be 600 lumens.
Wow.
All right. So, yeah, and it used to be measured in candle watt power, if you remember, in old mag lights, things like that.
Ah.
It'd be like 100 CW. 100 candle watts.
Oh, so, that's what that CW meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The CW was like how many candle watts it was. Lumens is kind of the same thing. So it's one of those, like, with the technology that we have, what's going on with our modern power grid? And is our modern power grid ready for this? And that's kind of what spurred our conversation last time because you had missed the 8 a.m. episode with Zach and you'd listened to it and we were talking about it and we were just like, you know, it's amazing to go through and look at some of this stuff because and folks, just so you know, the where we're pulling from tonight is the patents of Nikola Tesla. It is a PDF document that's about 500 pages. If you go to dudesandbeer.com/knowledge, that will take you to the Knowledge Vault. There you can see scientific documents and studies. Down at the bottom of that page is the patents of Nikola Tesla. Now, all of these PDFs on the Dudes and Beer website are open for download and sharing, so please feel free to download your own copy of this stuff. Check it out. You know, that's why it's there, is to show that these things exist. This stuff was there. Whether it's declassified government documents, whether it's the JFK documents, which was the first episode.
Yeah.
I still need to add the new JFK dump on there also. But these documents are there for people to lean on and for us to use to kind of help expand the knowledge for our audience and some of the topics that we talk about. So feel free to go and follow along tonight. Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault is where we're at. That's dudesandbeer.com/knowledge. / scientific documents and studies, and then patents of Nikola Tesla .pdf, and you can download that. Now, Nikola Tesla was actually a mechanical engineer, physicist, and futurist who's best known for his contributions to the design of modern alternating current electrical supply systems. He was born in Smiljan, Croatia in 1856.
During a lightning storm.
And actually died, believe it or not, folks, 5 days from today in 1943. 5 days from today, January 7th is when he passed away.
I think we hit a good time of doing
it. So it's a great arc of when to do this show, actually.
Yeah.
And he got his education at Graz University of Technology and Gymnasium Karlovac. He was known for most of the patents that actively have to do with not just the generation of alternating current electricity, but the transportation, storage of all kinds of things.
Oh, he nailed it all.
And, you know, like, it's amazing. One of his greatest quotes is, "The present is theirs. The future for which I really worked is mine." Mm-hmm. And we were actively, I think that's me buzzing back there, but...
And boy, was he right.
Yeah. And that's just it. The future for which I really worked is mine. And you can't say that better enough, because to go through the patents of Nikola Tesla, to find this stuff and start looking at it. I mean, the patents go back to the early 1900s, guys. And like I said, everything from the generators. I mean, let's start with his work with Thomas Edison, because when he first came over from Croatia, that was his first job, was working in Menlo Park in Edison Labs, working hand in hand with Thomas Edison.
And didn't he have a letter of recommendation from somebody when he came over, when he came to work with Edison? I heard there was a letter of recommendation, and that letter read, "You're one of the great scientists, and then here's the other one."
Could be. I'm not sure, but... for definite, it was one of those beautiful relationships that happened. And what a lot of people don't realize about Thomas Edison is, yes, he was a great idea man, holds hundreds of patents, as does Nikola Tesla. Hundreds of, like, this document alone is 500 pages, and this is not all of his patents.
Right.
It's just a large collection of them, most of them. But... over 500 pages of documentation for Tesla's patents, got to be almost that for Edison's also. We know Edison for the invention of the phonograph, for what we know as talking movies and motion photography, things like that. And
you know, he even invented a pen that was like – was back then supposed to be kind of like an equivalent of a copy machine, and a pen you could just hold, and it would like just, I guess it would write or whatever. But anyways, it was a flop and it didn't catch on. It later got picked up by a guy who started doing tattoos and started the modern tattooing.
Yeah.
The tattoo gun.
Yeah. It was an automatic writing device.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, Thomas Edison had a huge workshop that many, many, many engineers worked in.
Right.
He would come up with an idea and go, "Okay, engineers, go after it." Or they would come up with an idea. And what you have to understand for people who write patents, people who work in labs, like they come up with ideas all the time. I know people that work in labs and they write patents for their stuff, and the people that own the company own the patent.
There you go.
You know, like their name's on it, but they don't get to share in any royalties of it or anything like that.
So you're saying the company doesn't, right?
Yeah, no, the company owns the patent. Yeah. So the individual doesn't.
So the individual doesn't get the royalties. Yeah, see?
No, the company gets residuals and royalties. You may get a bonus for writing the patent or coming up with something, things like that. But it's pretty rare that you're going to get like in perpetuity royalties for writing a patent.
So you better be getting paid good.
If you work for Dow, like for instance, the woman that worked for Dow Chemical that came up with Kevlar.
Right.
She's not a fucking, she didn't die a millionaire.
No.
Because she came up with Kevlar.
Right.
Dow Chemical got millions and millions and millions of dollars selling Kevlar and Kevlar materials and the concept of Kevlar, things like that. And most of the time, you're given a good 10-year window from patent to when that patent
becomes
open.
It almost seems like it would be better for the individual to like just stay rogue, you know?
Almost. Excuse me. My beautiful mosaic just went down the wrong pipe as Steven said that. It would almost be better, but, you know, it's a lot easier for these things to get pushed through and go through if you have large funding, if you have – because you do have to show working models, and your science at least has to be sound. So it is one of those that whenever you're writing patents, whenever you're coming up with stuff, that you want to be kind of guarded with things. You want to be kind of guarded with your ideas until the moment that you release them, because people can steal them, people can use them. For instance, Marconi,
right?
The inventor of radio and the first person to use like telegraphy, Morse code wirelessly,
right?
Though he invented the radio signal,
right,
he used Tesla's boosting technology and Tesla's amplification technology to get that done. So he was actually denied the patent.
Yeah.
Because his technology was proprietarily reliant on somebody else's patent. Because without Tesla's stuff, his device doesn't work. He's denied the patent for it.
Right.
So Francisco Marconi got the credit for the first broadcast.
Schools teach Marconi was the first.
It was actually Tesla who first did it. And just did nothing with it. You know, Marconi used his technology.
And I also read that Marconi got a lot of these, you know, how to incorporate the Tesla stuff and what he was doing, because said Tesla was free with his inventions. He would post them and, and they would be newspapers. And
he and that's just it.
Like, he just put his stuff out there.
And that was kind of the sad legacy of Nikola Tesla, is the fact that Nikola Tesla was not about money.
Right.
The color of energy is green, folks. Right. It's just that simple. And, you know, that's just a fact. The color of energy is green. And that's not even a reference to recycle, reuse, or anything like that. That's the fact of there's money behind it.
There's
money to be made.
Back when he was at Wardenclyffe trying to give the free energy thing and building his baby, that Westinghouse was backing him up. And Westinghouse during the hard time that everybody went through there back
then? Yeah, the Great Depression.
Yeah, the Great Depression. So Westinghouse was having a hard time financially, and he said we couldn't pay him anymore. You know, he went to Tesla. Tesla had the contract in his pocket, took it out and tore it up. And they said that was an equivalent of $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Like, and he just tore it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he was about the discovery. He was about the science behind things and truly solving a problem. One of the big problems that he solved for Edison was actually – and, you know, that was one of the big promises that Edison made was, I'll give you – I think it was $500,000 if you'll fix my DC motor.
Right.
You know, and make it more – and he made it like, I think, 30% more efficient, something like that.
Yeah.
It made it actually functional to where it could, like, generate power, things like that. And Edison was like, "Oh, you have no idea what a joke is.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what that actually means."
Exactly.
You know, I was just joking around whenever I said that, and that begat the whole issue and begat the whole what became known as the War of the Currents, which was the fight, like you said. At that point, that's when Tesla separated himself from Menlo Park with Edison and the labs at Edison Labs. And started working under the financing of Westinghouse, which is where Westinghouse Power, things like that came from.
Now, I want to say that at first there was, after leaving Edison, J.P. Morgan, and then it was Westinghouse.
Yes, you are correct. And it was just one of those relationships that, you know, they saw the potential in what he had and the technology that he had. And the day that he was like, you know, hey, no, this is a way to transmit power to people.
Right.
I have a means by which to transmit power without lines, without all this stuff, without all of this infrastructure. And the problem is without all that infrastructure, There's government money to be had in that infrastructure.
Yeah. How are we going to put a meter on this?
Yeah. Like, how are we going to charge, like, the state of Oklahoma to get set up with a power grid?
Yeah.
You know, how are we going to charge them for a power station and things like that? And that was a lot of what led to the ultimate downfall of Nikola Tesla was his unlove of money, most definitely. But his forward-thinking technology, I mean, for instance, just right here, once you get past the intro, the first patent that comes up is the electric arc lamp, which, you know, was actually a mainstay in theaters until the 50s, 60s, the arc lamp. It was basically just a huge lens in front of an arc of electricity. You know, much like your light bulb is just a filament of, you know, cotton wrapped in tungsten with electricity going through it, you know, or thorium or, you know, in a halogen environment to increase brightness, things like that. It was looking at technology like that that was so future thinking, so far ahead of its time that it was used for so long. Even the concept of the incandescent light bulb from Edison Labs is still used. I mean, they aren't produced in great quantity anymore. It's pretty hard to go out and just find a 60 watt incandescent light bulb on a shelf anymore. But you know, it's interesting the fact that this technology is still being used today. And when we look at the patent for this, the patent was 1885. Was when the application was filed for the arc lamp.
Yeah, like I said, we're talking over 120 years.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And to know that that was still in use in theaters until the 60s, 70s, you know, stuff like that in some places. And you know, you go to, I know there was a buddy of mine not too long ago who's a lighting designer that was out on the road that saw one at a place he was at.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, like, look at this. And like, they were so huge and like permanently installed to the floor, you know? Whoa. So like, what are you going to do? Like completely uninstall this thing and all the wiring and all that. So yeah, you know, a lot of them are still there and in place, even though they aren't used.
Right.
And it's just wild to know that technology was there and used for so long. And even the technology of radio as we know it has changed very little. The only thing that's happened is FM, as opposed to amplitude modulation, which is what AM is. FM is frequency modulation. So you're actually manipulating the frequency at which things move instead of the amplitude. And, you know, it goes shorter distances, but is much more intense at those shorter distances. AM is really, really long range.
Very interesting.
To know that even that concept, radio that we know it, sure, there are digital signals going to radio now and everything else
now,
but it's still going over a tower. Like most of what is pushing radio, most of what is happening with
radio,
which
I'm sure was his idea,
on the studio side, is still happening to this day. But that only goes back to Marconi. That doesn't go back to the beginning of electricity. That doesn't go back to this stuff. Nikola Tesla goes back to the beginnings of alternating current. It goes back to the early 1900s.
Yeah.
You know, like we said, to go back almost 120 years now, almost 120 years, and know that everything that was made for the production of electricity, from the turbines under Niagara Falls, which are still used, to the power station that converted that power and pushed it over lines.
I bet those turbines are the same turbines that he used to light up Buffalo, perhaps.
Well,
maybe.
I mean, they've been updated and things that, but most of the infrastructure is still of that time.
Right.
Even the Hoover Dam goes back to the 30s, you know, goes back to right up around the time of the Great – I mean, it was during Hoover's administration.
Yeah. That's the name.
You know, And it's just – it blows my mind to sit back and think that this technology has existed for this long. That not only that, that we have been reliant – upon this technology for this long. To know that Tesla came up with the insulators. If you go down, and I want to say it's up around, I mean, let's just scroll down
now,
here.
Are these the ones that are like on the power lines?
Telephone poles? Here's the electromagnetic motor, and this is pretty much exactly what happens nowadays in alternating current motors and everything, folks. And this is a patent applied for November 30th, 1887. And if you look at these, it's pretty much the exact same windings.
Right. Like,
if you look at this design, literally, and go...
Yeah, it's not changed.
Go and take a slot machine car. You know, like a little Tyco electric car, and take the motor.
Like what I had as a kid. And,
like these figures
that
showing.
No, I remember seeing that.
It looks
exactly
like it.
I had it in the little
like
hand
it.
Thing where I would squeeze, and I could see inside of it that.
Yeah, like the motor looks exactly the same. There is no difference whatsoever. Even down to the shape of the magnets, man, is the same. And all you have to do, folks, is take a motor and turn it backward, and it's a generator. To know that in 1887, he patented the, and here's the electric transmission of power, October 12th, 1887.
Jeez.
Was when he put down the patent for the electric transmission of alternating current, things like that.
He's such a visionary because, none of this stuff, even existed, and he had these rudimentary tools.
Was already playing with it.
Yeah.
Was already tinkering around with it enough to have working drawings.
Yeah.
Enough to have working drawings.
To even complete the full vision, he had to create things to make it work that didn't even exist yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty much.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And right here is the concept for an amplification coil. You know, transistors, or not transistors, but electrical transformers. And right here, the... commuter for dynamo electric machines. Dynamo electric is basically hand cranks, you know, like old school Russian radios, survival radios, things like that.
Oh, okay, the hand crank
have
ones.
Them. But yeah, this is a hand crank dynamo that he designed, and that was 1887 as well. And yeah, if you go down and just keep on moving down, like that was up around page 200, something like that, that we started with this.
He was just constantly pumping
these
things out.
Even here is February 1894, an incandescent light bulb.
There it is.
An incandescent light bulb.
There's what it looks like.
Yeah. Which is pretty similar to Edison's, except for the fact that it used, I want to say, a solid carbon filament.
Really?
It used a solid carbon filament. Right.
Would that be the bulb that he had to create when Edison said you couldn't use my bulb for your lighting of the 1912 fair or some other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he didn't even create it at that. He had it.
Oh, okay.
He'd already created.
He just had to make them on a mass.
Yeah, he just had to produce them. But that was 1894.
Jeez.
So, you know, I mean, there is the fact, and you know, we can Google to see when the light bulb came about. I want to say it was.
Yeah, when was that?
Google it real quick. Because it's a little bit hard to reach the keyboard way behind me there while I'm talking, but you know the invention of the light bulb, things like that, were some of the moving factors that got us out of the Industrial Revolution, which was the Industrial Dark Ages. You know, like we had
1878.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, whenever he came up with his. 12 years later, this was 1894. So, that's 16 years later.
It's not bad though. Not bad at all.
No. And you know, it's because he had to come up with something for his own stuff. So, fine. If we can't use Tesla's lights, we'll use mine.
Right.
I'll design my own. That's not an issue.
That's pretty badass.
Here's even an electric meter for 1894, you know, so that they could tell how much power was being used. Here's a steam engine from 1894. You know, I mean, his inventions go well beyond the realm of regular electricity that we know and use on a daily basis. He had numerous patents for motors and cranks. And the thing
I think is weird is that how he wasn't very well accepted by the scientific community and kind of like an outcast. But when you look at these things, it's more so they should have been in awe and been like, man, this guy's brilliant, you know, like. But it seems like it was more the opposite back then for some oddly reason.
Well, a lot of that had to do with the war of the currents. It had to do it had to do with publicity put out by Thomas Edison to down Nikola Tesla's name and ideas.
Almost kind of like the modern day media we have now, right?
It was the original mudslinging, man. Like there were contests, competitions. I mean, good God, the only time that it went bad for Edison was after he electrocuted somebody using alternating current. Because he was trying to show the dangers of it. Like, you have to remember that with alternating current, the current is looking for a ground. With direct current, a ground already exists. So as soon as you touch an alternating current system, you become the ground. So, you're dealing with amperage and things like that that you aren't dealing with on the side of DC, which makes it a little bit more dangerous, yet still more dependable. And all Edison wanted to do was show the dangerous side. So he actively went out and built electric chairs, things like that. And all that ended up in the papers was Edison electrocutes people. man electrocuted by Edison's electric chair.
Right.
And it wasn't the big media snafu for Tesla that he wanted. It actually led to some detrimental ends and ended up being the case that AC won over and became the chosen power source. Before that, the Wizard of Menlo Park, Thomas Edison, had lockdown on all of that stuff.
Right.
It's so much so that it's still Edison power.
Right. I was going to say.
In New York and stuff like that.
His name is still on stuff.
So, it was definitely one of those that I wouldn't necessarily say he was an outcast so much as he was on the fringes of things. And what's really interesting is that Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison shared a great deal in common when it came to spirituality, when it came to spiritualism, which was huge in the late 1800s.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Early 1900s, the movement towards spiritualism, things like that. Seances, trying to contact the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Edison actually had a patent out for a spirit phone. Nikola Tesla himself, whenever he built his first large antenna arrays and things like that, said that he heard voices from the other side, which is interesting.
Because there was no radio.
There were no real radio stations broadcasting voice at the time.
Right. So what would you be?
What would you exactly be listening to teletype? interesting stuff. But they were both highly into that. They shared a lot with that and with strange science and with trying to reach that other side with science. But at the same time, Nikola Tesla did not have the he shared, I guess, where P.T. Barnum was the greatest showman on Earth. And at the same time, you had Eric Weiss also known as Harry Houdini, who was the greatest magician on earth.
Hell yeah.
It was kind of the same way. Thomas Edison was, electricity-wise, the greatest showman on earth.
Right, right.
You know, like, he knew how to promote it. He knew how to get things out there. He knew how to make a show of it with the press. Nikola Tesla was the master, the wizard of electricity. He was the master of electricity. Like, he put on demonstrations beyond compare with Tesla coils,
right,
things like that, where it was showing, you know, like, huge arcs of electricity, right, things like that, that he was touching and manipulating with his hands and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was mind-blowing. It's still mind-blowing to see.
And I bet they thought it was a trick a lot sometimes.
Oh, yeah. No, most definitely. And that's just it. Like, one of them was a much better showman. The other one was much better at press.
Yeah.
Which press typically leads to more success.
Yeah.
You know.
Because Tesla could hold that light bulb in his hand and it would be lit, you know, and it was like,
people
are saying, this is a trick.
Yeah, well, and it was a trick, most definitely. It's a great trick. I used to love doing it whenever I had an Eye of the Storm. You go out and get a little Eye of the Storm ball, folks. Mm-hmm. You can hold a little light bulb up to it and it'll light it.
It'll light it.
You know, especially a fluorescent bulb.
Oh,
hold a fluorescent bulb up to it, you'll see the thing light up just from the ambient energy around it. It's pretty wild and a great Tesla experiment. But that technology has existed since the early 1900s, since the late 1800s, Tesla coils and that kind of stuff. And what got the government interested in things, what got the government knocking on Tesla's door was, of course, the technology of wireless power, the technology of the being able to create lightning, man. You know, the concept of the Tesla death ray, the fact that you could kill somebody from like a mile away with pure electricity.
Right.
You know, something like that.
I seen a company, I think it was last week on TV, that actually used that technology of producing, you know, artificial lightning in a, you know, scenario in an atmosphere controlled and all, to test airplane parts and airplanes as, you know, like as they're flying, you know.
Yeah, no, it's used all the time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're talking arc currents that are almost equivalent to lightning.
Yeah.
And you can create that in a lab. You can make that. That's not incredibly hard. But they do it all the time. I mean, planes get struck by lightning all the time. The thing is, there's no ground. So it just passes right through.
Right through.
Just passes right over the skin of the airplane and is dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no ground there for it to go to. So.
Dang.
Yeah. And it's some great technology. It's fantastic. But that's the idea of not being grounded. Not being connected to the ground, is that the power can just flow around you. It can just go around you without any incident. And that's what's wild about sitting in a Tesla field or, you know, wearing a conductive suit to where the power is going around you instead of through you.
Ooh.
You know, that kind of stuff.
That's trippy.
and to know that this man knew of this over 100 years ago, and here's the apparatus for producing electrical currents of high frequency, which is what we use to get things across power lines and amplify them and everything else. That came out in February 23rd, 1897 is when the patent was filed for that. And like I said, to know that this stuff, our electric grid as it exists today, has been basically unchanged.
Right. It's still the same.
There have been updates in technology. There have been updates in transformers, things like that.
Right.
But the concept of what gets power from A to B has basically been unchanged for 120 years.
Dang, that's amazing.
That is just mind-blowing.
Yeah,
and I would challenge you. I would challenge you to find another industry other than electricity where the main means of production and distribution have not changed over the last 100 years. At the time that this came out, and I said it before the show when we were on the phone with Pops Davis, I said it before the show. At the time that this came out, Maine still had an active whaling industry, man. Like, they were still whaling for whale oil, for lamps.
Dude, how crude is that?
And things like that. Yeah. You know, like, oil, as we know it, petroleum oil had barely been discovered and started to be pumped out of the ground.
That's true, yeah.
Like, I want to say Spindletop was like 1887, was maybe 10 years before this. And that's the huge oil discovery out in Beaumont.
Damn.
That led to the Texas oil boom and wildcatting and everything else. It may have been after that. Google it. Google Spindletop.
Spindletop.
Just Google Spindletop. And find out the date real quick, because that'll tell us immediately when we started looking at fossil fuels.
It's funny how every time I go to type it in, everything I'm Googling, it already has it in there.
Isn't that curious? It's almost like it hurt us.
Built 1900, it says.
1900.
Yep.
1900. So let's get this, folks. 1900. So 3 years after Nikola Tesla's technology came about was when we discovered oil and started harvesting oil out of the earth.
Yeah.
On a large scale, like before Spindletop, there was Pittsburgh, things like that. You know, there was oil discovered up in the Northeast, that kind of stuff. But Spindletop was really, really, really what brought the fossil fuel industry that we know today, oil and petroleum, to the forefront of everything.
Oh, geez.
That is when it was like, there are reserves beyond belief.
Right.
You know, before then, there was speculation.
Get that dino blood.
But, yeah. Get that dino blood. Go get it. Go pump that dino blood.
What a bad idea. Even Tesla said it was very, like, rudimentary and crude how we would get our energy.
Why do you think it's called crude oil?
Yeah, crude oil. Exactly.
Because it has not been refined yet. But what's funny is that even since all of that, like, very little of our production of oil, that some of the ways that we drill for oil have changed. And to look at Spindletop in 1900 and know that 30 years later, a young man known as Howard Hughes would come around in the Houston, Texas area.
Oh, shit.
And what he made his big bones and money on was drilling tips.
Really?
And there's a whole display in the Houston Museum of Natural Science about it.
Oh, shit.
Where it actively shows, like, the huge drilling point.
Yeah.
Which is what was used for oil production and technology until, like, the 70s, and versions of it are still used today.
Damn.
Versions of how we hydraulically drill for oil, where it's, like, some cogs that grind stuff as it moves down and has, like, a jet of water and things like that that help degrade the earth. And then it crushes rocks and moves down. The drill bits have changed very little since then. The only thing that's changed is metallurgic composition, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
But the technology itself is just about the same as it was in Howard Hughes's day. We have some better casing technology with cement and things like that.
Yeah.
And my cousin Ricky could probably come on and talk for days about that shit.
Really?
He works out in oil fields now. He goes out and inspects offshore rigs. But very little of that stuff more of that industry has changed.
Right.
Than the electric industry.
Exactly.
Polymers now, like, if you look around this studio in and of itself, I mean, my cousin Tim Londine was talking to Amy at my uncle's funeral the other day about what he did. And, you know, he makes benzoate. And, like, not many people realize. But, you know, it's like, we take this stuff called benzoates from oil and we make polymers, you know, and like everything from like there are like three different types of polymers just in our headphones, you know, stuff like that. Everything from soft rubber to hard plastic, your tennis shoes, you know, the nylon in your tennis shoes, like your tennis shoes that you're wearing right now. Your Chuck T's are almost 100% polymer, other than the aluminum lace holes and some of the cotton that's meshed with the nylon, you know.
Damn.
Like, other than that, 100% polymer.
Dang.
You know, so to look at that science and know that every day, I mean, good God, Kevlar is a polymer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's a byproduct of the petroleum industry. And to know that that industry has changed and morphed so much, yet still the technology and industry of power creation and transportation has changed very little.
Right.
And I mean, Tesla, just so you know, folks, even had solar plans.
Sure did.
I'm trying to find them right now as I'm just scrolling through like page 300
somewhere. And yeah, he did harness power from the sun.
But yeah, no, he talked about harnessing power from the sun.
He said this is what we should be doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's his he came up with the turbine engine.
Yeah.
I mean, the turbine engine
on your airplanes that fly you around?
Yeah, yeah, that's on your everyday airplane
Everyday
that flies
airplane.
You from point A to point B.
Still today.
That's a turbine engine, you know.
So, I mean, it's just wild this guy was able to create these things. You know, he envisioned it first.
And to conceptualize them at a time long before.
Yeah.
Like the turbine engine, I'm trying to find it in here. Here's a method for utilizing radiant energy. 1901.
Whoa.
Patented November 5th, 1901. Radiant energy, solar energy, folks. So 1901, since 1901, Nikola Tesla has been talking about harvesting solar energy. And not only that, but wirelessly transmitting it.
Yeah.
And just recently, like in the last few years, NASA has talked about putting a solar base on the moon.
Ooh.
To wirelessly power things, to transmit power to the International Space Station, to transmit power back to Earth.
Well, shit, that's something they should have done a long time ago.
You know, well, I mean, granted, the ISS and other satellites operate off of this technology. They actively operate off of solar power. You know.
That's why they had those big old panels off to the side, right? I mean.
Yeah.
The whole look of the satellite is those panels.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of the time they're built into the body of the satellite now, just to avoid stuff. But heck, here's 1903, a system for signaling. It's basically your blinkers for your car.
And what year was that?
1903.
Jeez,
1903.
The car must have just came out.
Yeah. And
looks like a blinker.
Yep. Yep. So, I mean, his reach and knowledge was so vast and so far and within the realm of not just electrical engineering, but physical engineering. And I dare even say geoengineering because of the fact of using natural forms of power, utilizing things like the power of the now frozen Niagara Falls. It's so cold up north that Niagara Falls is actually frozen over, folks.
Ooh, so, Jesus.
At least the surface. There's still moving water underneath, things like that. Like the source of the river is not frozen
solid.
Over.
Yeah, not solidly frozen.
But enough to where the top of the river and the falls is frozen over, you know? Like, that's pretty wild. That's some cold action. I think I saw like negative 40 this morning up in Minnesota.
Ooh.
Yeah, with wind chills and everything else. It's some nasty stuff.
Jeez, dude.
So With Tesla in mind and with these things in mind, you really do have to wonder what our future is, what our future holds. If we're looking like we, it came out a few years ago, the wireless charging for devices, wireless charging plates,
right,
and stuff like
right.
that. And people touted
or you can,
it
as you're driving.
Well,
now,
people
it
acted,
charges while
people,
you're driving.
People acted like it was something new. Like the man
right,
thought
exactly.
about this shit 100 years ago.
Right. A lot of this new stuff is almost like just look back in these old patents of Tesla. It's like
it's a rehash.
Yeah,
it's a rehash of technology. And you know, this goes beyond Tesla Motors. It goes beyond anything like their wall technology, stuff like that. It goes down to how we conceive technology, how we conceive electricity.
And how it all came the things we're talking about, which is huge things of everything that's around us that we use every day, came from this one man,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Everything.
Right.
Everything came from this one dude.
Right. Because you could take one of the inventions and say, wow, I don't know how he did that, how he figured that one out. But he had so many that contributed to the future and the today that we live
in. That are still being used.
Yeah.
That are still being used to this day and barely improved on
right.
to this day. Made slightly more efficient through the use of modern materials. Nothing more.
Right.
Nothing more. The concept is exactly the same. If you go through that patent right there
right.
and that book of patents, rather, 500 pages of documentation there on the Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault of patents of Nikola Tesla, you will find that the transformer and the design for a transformer has changed very little. Very, very little. Like, even the dimensions of it are almost right. the same on the back of that guitar amp behind you.
Right.
You know? Well, like, every guitarist knows
like
what it looks like.
If I'm not mistaken, I mean, the patent that we've gone through and looked at shows, you know, designs and stuff like for like volume knobs and the
yep.
transistors and
yeah,
and
potentiometers
all that.
For, yeah,
you know,
power distribution. It goes, like we said, even into physical things like turbines,
right?
That he came up with in the early 1900s, far, far before we were playing around with jet engine technology. Like at that point, we were still flying fucking Sopwith Camels. You know, like the Wright brothers had barely flown.
I read about when he did a demonstration of a radio-controlled boat that
mm-hmm.
he put on a pond, and the people were just so blown away and couldn't even really understand it and just thought there was a little human being, a little midget in it.
Yeah, something. Yeah. They thought there was somebody underneath the water, like, pedaling around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy is so light years ahead of them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the man invented radio control. He invented radar. He invented so many things.
Talking about transmitting images and stuff. And
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And how would you even, like, go to even think of it?
Conceptualize television
yeah.
before we did.
Yeah,
you know,
before it's like
just
all there was back then was barns and buildings and just
yeah.
like rude
the
ways
man's,
of living.
The man's barely past the cotton gin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and talking about things that are still used to this day. So that is the genius of Nikola Tesla. That is just a taste of the breadth of Nikola Tesla. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, everybody. Everyone that listened.
Great.
We love having these
great
shows. We're looking at having John Bowne on for some additional Knowledge Vault episodes, especially as we come across.
Ooh, that'd be
well,
good.
The next Knowledge Vault, we've already decided.
Yeah,
we don't
we
know
did.
When it's happening yet.
It's going to be a good
Steve-O
one.
Needs to catch up with a couple things because there's
a
great,
one.
Great show on Netflix. I highly recommend everybody go watch it before the next Knowledge Vault, which will happen here in a month or so.
Yeah.
In the next few weeks.
Yeah. Can't wait.
But we'll be talking about MKUltra and the CIA's program of mind control that was exposed in the 1960s
yep.
with the Roosevelt Commission, things like that. The curious case of Frank Olson, a researcher who mysteriously died after, quote, falling or being dropped out of a window.
Mm-hmm.
Still something
right.
that is curious to this day. Go watch the show Wormwood on Netflix, folks, to prepare yourself for this, because it is one of the most mind-opening and riveting and just revelatory discussions to have in this day and age regarding not only our government and declassification of things with our government, but the reaches and depths to which public, our government has gone to.
The public a lot of people think that that's too wild of a thing to think that our government would do such things and try and experiment with mind controlling on us. And at the same time, it was in the papers that came out. It was government papers that came out when they thought they were destroyed. Hey, yeah, we did that. There was, you know.
Well, it wasn't even thought to be destroyed. Yeah. They were actively in the middle of doing it whenever it came to light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they didn't even, like, dismiss admitting it.
Right.
Like, the government just about openly admitted it and said, yeah, we experimented with this stuff because what if our enemy was experimenting with it? If our enemy was experimenting with it in any way, shape, or form, we had to know how they would get a hold of our guys, what they might administer to them, what they might do to them, like how they would react, you know, and that was their out, you know. But what did happen to Frank Olson? What was the circumstances behind his coming to be involved with the federal government, coming to be involved at Fort Detrick? What were some of the things that were going on with the MKUltra program, with the use of LSD by our federal government on unwitting citizens, as well as on volunteers? And that's just – that's one of the many, many things that we will be talking about in upcoming episodes of Knowledge Vault with Dudes and Beer.
Yeah.
So on that note, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode 143 of the Dudes and Beer podcast.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Jordan, your host. Stephen Bishop with me tonight.
Yeah.
Make sure and catch us on the HC Universal Network. That's hcuniversalnetwork.com, folks. Until next time, everybody, if you can't be good,
be good at it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast. To listen to our audio streams and chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for both Android and iDevices, available on the Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.
Merry New Year!